Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome to another episode of Missing Frames. This is the podcast where we watch all the movies we should have seen by this point in our lives. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge, and joining me for the first time in his entire life is Aaron Prescott. Hopefully not the last time, but Aaron, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. I am a legitimate big fan of this show. I not only loved what you guys bring to the table, but I love the concept. It's a very positive outlook of, you know, I feel like there's so much negativity when it comes to kind of film shaming people of like, oh, you haven't seen that movie before. And I love how you guys approach that with just like, we should have seen it at this point of our lives, but you know, it's better late than never.
That's exactly right. And you know what? I love having people on the show who compliment me. And that's really why I've decided to have you on, because you're very good at complimenting me.
Yeah, well, that's what it said in your email, is to say what I just said. So if I said it right,
exactly,
then
and you got it within the first couple minutes, because we want to make sure people have not tuned out by this point. Usually when they figure out how kind of like proud and prideful I am, they start to tune out, which means we've lost about half the listeners by this point. But that's totally fine. You know what? We're going to press through it and it's going to be amazing. So Aaron and I, we've been trying to get together for a little while, trying to record an episode. We narrowed it down to two. We were going for either Ed Wood or Point Break, and I just leaned on Point Break because partially it's on Amazon Prime, which makes it easier to watch, but also I feel like you get more of a reaction when you or at least I do, when I tell people I've not seen Point Break. People are like, what, you haven't seen it? So it's funny that you mentioned that at the beginning of the show, how sometimes people can be a little bit negative about it. That's what Missing Frames is all about. We're all about fixing those problems and making the magic happen. So this is one I've always wanted to check out. But Aaron, what is your kind of like, what's your history with Point Break? I know you're a fan. Do you remember when you saw it, like the first time you saw it, what that experience was like?
Yeah, I don't know if I can recall like the exact moment of when I saw it. I was too young to see an R-rated movie. I think I was 10 at the time when it came out in theaters, and so I couldn't see it on the big screen. But I remember probably catching it on, you know, basic cable. And so it was completely probably just butchered and edited to death. But still the nuts and bolts of the story that Kathryn Bigelow is telling in this movie, it's basic in a way. And so you get everything you need, but she tells it in such a, energetic way. And also, you know, incorporating some new stuff with, you know, surfing was still, you know, it was kind of like that early 90s kind of X Games extreme mentality that was kind of starting to, you know, come of age. And so it was kind of having that. It was having Keanu Reeves and Patrick Swayze. And so it was just kind of like it all meshed together. So even with a dulled down, watered down, edited version on TV, you still got everything you could possibly need from it. And then you just, you know, you get to watch it in full glory, you know, on beautiful HD nowadays. And it makes it even more worth it.
Absolutely. And apparently, I think you mentioned this to me before, that Keanu Reeves became a surfer because of this movie. And I'm just shocked that he, with his mentality and his mannerisms, it was just shocking to me that he wasn't already a surfer. I feel like he is the epitome of what a surfer should be.
I think he just carries that presence about him. And you know, he's one of those guys. It's one of those movies where, like to present movies to my wife. My wife is the exact opposite of me, which means she's very intelligent and she does not appreciate movies like all people should. And so I'll do like a sort of pseudo film class with her where we'll either, you know, focus on a genre or maybe a director, maybe an actor or something like that. And I think we were like maybe doing some action movies at that time. And, you know, it finally came to Point Break. And I was like, oh, it's surfing. And there's, you know, Patrick Swayze and Keanu Reeves. And
I love that. I love that surfing was one of the ways you sold it to her. There's surfing in it. You've got to see this movie.
Surfing. You'll never, oh man, surfing and guns, what more could you want? But as soon as I got to Keanu Reeves, it's like, there was like a switch in her mind. She does not like Keanu Reeves, which first off breaks my heart. And it, but it's one of the things that you know you're, you know, you're, and there's true love there where you can look past that wrong, you know, remark that they're making and say, I love you, but you're completely wrong. That sort
exactly.
of thing.
Exactly. When it comes to Keanu Reeves, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not the one that's going to, you know, put blinders on. Like, I understand he's not the greatest actor, you know, that has graced our earth. But I truly believe that giving him to the right director and the right character and the right things that can like mold around his sensibilities, he can be absolutely perfect. You put him in, you know, a John Wick, or you put him in The Matrix, or you putting him in River's Edge or anything like that, he's going to excel. And Bill and Ted, I mean, there would be no Bill and Ted without him. And he oozes that mentality. You put him in The Lake House and you're like, oh, I get it. I see, you know, where we didn't go right. And
you're telling me I had Lake House as the next Missing Frames. I mean, I've not heard anyone not say that's a masterpiece.
Please let me be on so we can discuss the Lake House.
A very special episode of Missing Frames.
Yes. Yes, yes.
But no, it's true. I mean, I completely agree. I'm a huge Keanu fan. I'm actually thrilled he's kind of back on the good side of the public, or the movie going mm-hmm. public with John Wick and all that stuff, because it felt like for a while we had the sad Keanu memes, and that just it was funny.
That was all because of my
time,
wife.
Exactly. I feel like now that you mention it, I feel like it's probably her saying, I don't like him. He probably somehow, I feel like he's like a very spiritual guy. He probably tuned into that. And it's what mm-hmm. your wife is what made the sad Keanu meme. I think we can
I hope she's listening and feels bad about this, because she watched the movie and she loved it. And that's all there is to it.
Exactly. So Keanu is, he very much is the kind of guy who needs to work with the right director. And speaking of directors, this is Kathryn Bigelow, and I have not seen a Kathryn Bigelow movie before she became Oscar-winning Kathryn Bigelow, the Oscar-winning director.
Okay, okay.
I did not even know that she directed Point Break for a long time. It was like, really? Because I associate Point Break with like, kind of like the dumb machismo action movies of that era. And for some reason, it was like Bigelow, I think, very sophisticated, very thoughtful, and very like dramatic, intense filmmaking. You know, I've seen Hurt Locker, I've seen Zero Dark 30, Detroit. I associate her with a very specific kind of movie, and Point Break is not that. I almost, like, for a long time thought it was like maybe somebody like Paul Verhoeven, who I love. That's not a knock against him, but Verhoeven is known for making those kinds of silly movies with this raging kind of male mentality. So I've always associated a Point Break with that. When I found out she directed it, I was like, oh my God. There's apparently a whole bunch of movies from like the early 90s, early in her career, when she was kind of just taking off, that I need to see.
Oh, you must watch Near Dark. That's another great one. Pairing that up with this, I mean, if like, you know, it's just kind of like fun, intense, gritty vampire movie, and that's like, you put that up there with Lost Boys and it's perfect. I mean, it's got young Bill Paxton and Lance Henriksen in it, and it's fantastic. It's really great. So yeah, there's a lot of her early stuff that I would put up there, but for me, like, Point Break takes the cake. Like, it's just it's kind of, you know, it puts so many definitions of 90s action movies, and also kind of the buddy cop genre, because I think, you know, there's kind of different variables of that buddy cop system, where, you know, you have your Lethal Weapons and, you know, Die Hard, especially like number three, where, you know, it kind of comes up. But this kind of had like a different mentality because you're working on two different angles. You're working with the buddy cop system. And when you're doing this sort of the undercover cop where he's befriending the bad guy. And so it's a really cool different, you know, kind of take on the genre.
And speaking of that, I have a very important question to ask you, Aaron. Is The Fast and the Furious just Point Break?
100%. It's almost scary how everything from the surfer mentality that Paul Walker kind of emotes, but this relationship between Paul and Dom is it fits so neatly in the Point Break universe, and it's just like a nice carbon copy, but into the world of automotives. And, you know, it was kind of like, you know, in the early 2000s, that was like the new extreme sport, was this technology and these, you know, gearheads. And so it just, it kind of fit real neatly into that. And so in another, you know, 15 or 20 years, we'll, you know, maybe when they stop making, you know, Fast and Furious movies, we'll get the next evolution of this story. You know, who knows what it'll be.
Exactly. And if we can at least credit Point Break with anything, it's giving us the Fast and the Furious franchise, which is unfortunate that Point Break didn't spawn its own, like, multi-billion-dollar, multi-film franchise. But
sure.
There is that remake. Did you see the remake? Because I've heard terrible, terrible things about it.
I did not, only because I've heard terrible, terrible things about it. And, you know, I thought about, you know, watching it up, you know, for this event that we were putting together. But, you know, maybe I'll have to put on hold and just bask in the glory of Point Break instead of the not so glorious, you know, history of Point Break. Because, yeah, I haven't really heard anything good about it. I remember when I watched the trailer and everything that could have gone wrong with the original Point Break, it felt like was, you know, hit right on the head in the trailer. So it looked awful. So, but I'm also a glutton for pain, so I will watch it at some point.
That's what I remember seeing the trailer and thinking, like, man, I haven't seen the original Point Break, but I just know that I'd rather be watching that than this. And that's like that says it all. And other than that, I mean, so here's what I know about Point Break, or here's my experience. I like I said, I've never seen it. Missing Frames is all about watching movies we need to see. And so as a kid, I think I was about maybe 8 or 9 years old, and I was living with like a family, and they had rented it. It was a couple. It's like, oh, it's the adult movie where all the adults, the kids are going to go to bed, and the adults are going to watch the R-rated movie. And I remember, I can't remember why I was up, but I guess I was like downstairs with them and they had the movie on, but I remember thinking like, oh no, this movie's rated R, I shouldn't be watching this, I better go do something else. And it was the surfing scene. I remember that because there's a giant wave that somebody, I think it was Patrick Swayze, is like, I'm gonna conquer this wave, and everyone's like, oh no, he's gonna die. And I remember thinking like, oh no, I can't watch a scene in an R-rated movie where someone surfs and drowns. I can't watch R-rated surfing. I don't know what R-rated surfing entails, but I guess I thought it was way more violent and grown up than normal surfing was. But that's my lasting memory of Point Break. It's the only thing I know about it.
Be honest, this is why you've never surfed a day in your life.
That's exactly it. Point Break has kind of scarred me, that one moment, and I have I've never been able to go. It's done more damage to my swimming than Jaws ever could. And, it really is an upsetting thing. But I feel like this is a great opportunity to conquer those fears. And other than that, I mean, I know there's surfing involved. I know there's Fast and Furious was essentially a ripoff of this. I also know that there's the scene where Keanu points his gun in the air and fires it, like in Hot Fuzz, because I've seen Hot Fuzz and I love Hot Fuzz. And I know that's about all I know about Point Break.
Well, speaking of Hot Fuzz, so when it comes to a certain, you know, group of directors, we have our Quentin Tarantinos and our Wes Andersons and our Edgar Wrights. Those are the kind of directors that they feel like they've been spending their entire lives like just consuming every specific sort of movie that they have loved their right. entire lives, and then reforming it and spewing it back out to us. And Hot Fuzz was definitely one that, you know, had some regurgitation of Point Break, and in a loving way, because I love Hot Fuzz. And so,
amazing.
I went back into my shed, and I found this little promo book right here. This is a
And the people at home, you cannot see this, but there's an actual, it's a Hot Fuzz promo book. It has the badge, the Hot Fuzz badge on it. This is legit.
Yep.
It does not get more
legit. Yeah, this
legit
is legit. When I was at school in San Francisco, these were just like being handed out by somebody in like a British, you know, Bobby policeman's uniform, and they were just handing these out as like promo materials because Hot Fuzz is about to come out. And so you have one page where it's talking about Nicholas Angel, you have another page where it's talking about Danny Butterman, and then it has a whole list of training films. And so pretty much this is Edgar Wright, you know, putting down his list of these are the movies you must watch before coming to watch my movies, because I owe everything to these movies. And I love that about, you know, Tarantino and Wright and these kind of guys, where they take these influences, and even if, you know, some of them are more obvious homages than others, but the thing I love about that is it gives people that would not normally go watch these other movies a purpose to go watch these movies. And so right. on this list, you have Bad Boys 2, you have Bullet, you have Hard Boiled, Lethal Weapon, Serpico, Super Cop, and then of course right in here in the middle you have Point Break. And I think that's all that needs to be said about it, because it is such an integral part of the 90s action buddy cop sort of subgenre, and it works so well. Catherine Bigelow was like the perfect choice for it, even though the first choice for it, I believe Ridley Scott was first attached to the movie, and he was going to be on it, and that fell through. But and I think Cameron had producing rights on it, and so he was like, give it to my wife. And so Bigelow took it from there.
I'm so excited. I'm legitimately excited to watch this movie. I was already excited. It's just a whole other level now. So are you pumped to watch this?
I am so pumped. Like I said, I watched it maybe a year or two ago with my wife. Loved it then. You kind of start watching these movies in a way where it's like, I know I loved it back then. Will I still love it now? You know, 10, right. 15 years removed. Because, you know, I don't do rewatches all that often. But I'm so glad when a movie hits the same way it does again. And this one just feels like a slice of life of the 90s, and I'm excited to dive back in.
Perfect. Let's get to it.
All right, man.
Now available to own on video cassette.
While we're off watching the movie, I want to take a quick second to talk to you about this GoFundMe on the Nerd Party. You may have seen this already. You might have seen it on our Facebook page or Twitter page. You may have heard me or someone else on the Nerd Party talk about it. So I'll try to be as brief as possible so we can get back to the show. But basically what you need to know is the Nerd Party has been hit by a legal claim. We can't go into the details of it, but we need your help. Basically what's going on is they're asking for an amount that is less than what it would be to go to court. And they know that that's how they get their money. Now, we don't make any money. We don't have business insurance. We're just doing this because we love doing it. We love talking about movies and all that nerdy stuff. And we're asking for your help. Any amount you can donate would be greatly appreciated. You can go to GoFundMe.com/TheNerdParty. And feel free to talk about this on your podcast or your social media, anywhere. Again, that website is GoFundMe.com/TheNerdParty. And if you want, you can use the hashtag TNPFight to help spread the word, help us out, and help us fight back. Thank you so much. Now, what do you say? Let's get back to the show. And we're back. We are all Point Breaked out. And Aaron, you might hate me. I did not love this movie. Now, I didn't dislike it. I will say that, but
okay.
It's funny. Okay. We talked a little bit about The Fast and the Furious and how that's essentially a ripoff of this movie, but I had a very similar I realized my disappointment in Point Break and the first Fast and Furious movie are very similar in that I almost wanted, as ridiculous as Point Break was, I wanted it to commit even more. I feel like Kathryn Bigelow is such a good director that she was desperately trying to pull. She's like, I know this is a surfer bro movie, but let me pull it back in with my awesome skills, and I'm going to try to make this something legitimate. And I'm almost like, oh, you should have just gone completely overboard. And it's not her fault either. I think a lot of the weaknesses are just in the script itself. I feel my insides melting, so I'm going to let you say, is there something you need to get off your chest and say right off the bat?
No, disappointment, and I feel like we should just end it right here. Both our friendship, the podcast, our relationship.
Aaron, come back.
I've already unfriended you. Nope. Oh, okay. I'm back. No. So is it more the you wanted to go more into like the depth of like the surfer lingo? Or you feel like she didn't go further enough into it, and she. It was more of a procedural, do you think?
I think it was. It felt very much like two movies to me. You had the ex-presidents. You had the whole that whole plot line where it's like he is an FBI agent looking for these guys, and then the other half of the movie was like the crux of the movie. The reason this movie exists is like you were saying in the pre-show. It's that perfect time capsule of like this is the early 90s. Surfing was like the awesome cool thing to do. All these guys on the beaches of California just hanging out surfing. It took a long time for those two movies to really collide. Mm-hmm. I thought Keanu Reeves, Johnny Utah, which by the way is a fantastic name. I didn't know the names of the characters going into it. I did not know it was Johnny Utah. I think you probably mentioned it in the show, but just hearing the guy at the beginning give him the thumbs up, he's like 100% Utah, and Keanu Reeves gives that classic thumbs up that is a gift.
It's widely used. It's such a perfect like American name. Like it just. He can't come from anywhere but middle of America and be the football star and, you know, and then move on into becoming an FBI agent or a policeman or somebody of, you know, service, you know, back to his country. So it just feels like that's the epitome of what he needs to be. Now, so because I was also kind of thinking of it if you know, there's I have an issue with. I've got three kids and my whole thing is as a cinephile dad, it's like, when is that right time to show them the certain movie, that particular movie? 'Cause even though this is a rated R movie, I can completely see, that it might require, or necessitate seeing it at either a certain, period in life, or just at a certain time in your own life. Because if like you show a movie too soon, it's like, you know, they're watching it and it's kind of just like blank stares. They don't understand. And then you're like, was that good? And he's like, yeah, I guess. But they don't fully grasp it and they don't, you know, get like the, you know, what they didn't get at 5 years old. They understand at 8 years old.
Right.
And so the same thing with like, you know, this kind of this broiness, this early 90s, very, you know, over the top personalities that she's creating. Is there a certain time, like, you know, did I respond to it more when I was younger just because it was kind of like it felt gnarly and like, you know, I had some surfer friends going up, and so it was just kind of like that was like the cool thing, you know, you kind of felt like you're part of the club in a way. And so was it that, and then when I went back to it, my most recent revisit, with my wife, I was really worried about that and I had a lot of fun with it. But I don't think that necessarily goes with everybody. So do you feel like if you had seen this at an earlier stage in your life, do you think you would have responded differently?
I think so. This is like one of those perfect, like, I feel like this should have been one of the first R-rated movies I'd ever seen. Like, as a 12-year-old, okay, I think if it was, like, there's the whole, like, the cool factor of, like, oh, it's rated R, and I get to watch a movie where these cool guys go surfing, and then he's an FBI agent, and they go skydiving, and they rob stuff. Mm-hmm. I think I would have thought this was the coolest movie ever. It pains me that I can't sit here and be like, oh, my God, I loved it for what it was. But because there are so many things about this movie that work. And I think as a 12-year-old, I would have been more like, this is awesome. I think now I'm definitely more like, oh, but if only this and that. But the things that really worked for me are the ex-president's side of things. Anytime there's action involved, I think Bigelow already in this like early movie of hers is demonstrating such a keen sense of how to direct action. Because I remember the bank robbery scene at the beginning, I was like, oh my God, this is great. This is intense. It's exciting. And from that point on, you know, the scene where they raid the house, the guys they think are the robbers, that was exciting and intense and fun.
With a little cameo from Tom Sizemore.
Oh, was he there? I missed
that.
Yeah,
he's I say that. I'm pretty positive that was him, but he's the undercover agent. I'm checking it right now just to make sure. But I'm almost positive when they go in and he's like, you think I like cutting my hair like this? And and he's been undercover for like 3 months or something like that.
That's right.
I'm pretty sure.
That was him. Huh.
Oh, yes. Good. Okay. It is. He's uncredited, though. That's interesting.
He had
a speaking part, but he's uncredited. But yeah, a little Tom Sizemore. But yeah, no, I completely get that. And, you know, so since it is kind of like, you know, since Fast and Furious is an unofficial remake of this movie, how did you react to Fast and Furious when you first saw that? Because I saw that when I was in high school. And I remember, you know, I wasn't really a car guy. I was still just a movie guy back then. I appreciated cars, but I drove, what was my car back then? A Ford Aspire, which is a...
I was hoping you were going to say a bicycle. My car was a bicycle.
I at least had a car at some point in high school, and I had a Ford Aspire. It got 0 to 60 in 7 days, and it was kind of like a slightly off red, so off red that you could possibly call it pink in a way, and so I wasn't a car guy, but I appreciated my friends that did have cars. But I remember going into that movie and kind of feeling like this is kind of dopey, it's kind of dumb, it's kind of fun, but kind of whatever at the same time.
Yeah.
But I remember coming out of the theater. And the thing that struck me the most was every single person that had a nice-ish car, you know, had like definitely a Honda Civic somewhere, because everybody had a Honda Civic at that time. And the whole like theater parking lot, people are just revving their engines and like just they were so pumped. And it was like this feeling. And I felt like I kind of had that feeling when I came out of Point Break for the first time. And maybe it's because I was younger and I just responded to the characters that way. And I just loved who Keanu Reeves, you know, was at that point.
He's perfect. I mean, in this there could not have been a more perfect role. This and Bill and Ted, I feel like, were just tailor made for the guy.
Yes. Yes. And so how do you feel about I was looking it up. So the actors that they were looking at before Keanu were Matthew Broderick, Johnny Depp, and Charlie Sheen. And do you see any of them in the role? And let's put this as early 90s versions of each of
right,
those guys.
Right. Honestly, Keanu Reeves is great in this role. It is not a great performance. The line readings are hysterically bad at times. The movie calls for some heavy lifting dramatically at times that he just cannot get. Like he just can't do it. There's the one
but
line
he's,
where
he's easily balanced by Patrick Swayze and Gary Busey. That's where they come in.
Yeah.
And they pick up that slack just a little bit, so he can bring that character that we need. Because guess what? There are some there's some, you know, just dumb people out there. And not right. necessarily saying his character's dumb, even though he's not a very good cop. I mean, this is like his first, you know, mission.
He brings his surfboard.
And he's already...
He brings his surfboard into the office with him. He's like, what are you talking about? What's going on? Do you have anything to say for yourself? Yeah. And he goes, I caught my first tube today, sir. And I was like, I wanted more of that in this movie. Just like the blatant stupidity of the situation.
Yeah.
But
can we also say how great John C. McGinley was in the role of the police chief? Like, he just plays that part perfect. He's played that role his whole life, but he plays it just like Keanu has played that role his whole life. John C. McGinley has played that, you know, a-hole, sort of person in charge his whole entire life, but he plays it perfectly.
He's so good at it. And to speak to Keanu, I think Catherine Bigelow looked at him, listened to him. He seems like a wonderful guy, so I'm sure she was very charmed by him as a person, but she was probably thinking of him, yes, I believe him as a surfer first and foremost, not so much thinking of him as an actor. I think you get a Johnny Depp or a Charlie Sheen in this movie. Matthew Broderick, not so much, but I think
Broderick, I can't see at all.
No, not one bit.
I do see Depp, though. I can see Johnny Depp.
Depp, I think would have brought more credibility to the role. But you know, part of the movie's charm is Keanu's performance. It almost
completely agree.
Yeah, you can't have Depp would have given like Oscar caliber, you know, he would have gone all out. You almost need like what Bigelow's thinking, which is I need a surfer, a guy who I can buy as a surfer dude more so than a great actor. And that's why it brings the charm to it. And I feel like you can't replace that. So I think it's I'm glad he was in it. You get like when he's on the phone, when Tyler finds out that, oh, you're an FBI agent and I hate you. And she runs out on him and he calls her and he's like, oh, why can't I just say what I mean? It's so funny.
That is pretty terrible, but I kind of love it in the same vein.
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, it's so out there. It's so bananas in the way, even that it's structured, because it kind of has the mentality of a movie that would just be like a quick 90-minute, you know, procedural, get in, meet the bad guys, bad guy takes a turn this way, and then, you know, it wraps itself up at the end. But she really kind of plays with this whole, you know, it was very kind of early in this kind of the hetero bromance thing that, in Hot Fuzz, that they play with a lot.
Yeah, I got a strong Tony Scott Top Gun vibe from this movie. Like it felt like it could have been directed by Tony Scott. Like those were some of my earliest notes. I was like, this feels like a Tony Scott movie, which makes sense because this was right around the time when he was at his peak.
His brother was first attached. Ridley Scott was first attached,
which is so funny. That's so funny because it feels more like a Tony Scott movie. It would fit his sensibilities more. And I really trying to think about it and trying to pinpoint what it was. I was like, what is it about this movie that's just not clicking for me? And I think like when I compare it to The Fast and Furious, I guess, and maybe this is just an unfair expectation on my part, and maybe now that I know what the plot of the movie is, I might go back and be like, oh, I see. But I almost felt like the reveal of who Patrick Swayze is, like the fact that Bodhi is the leader of the ex-presidents, that he and his gang are those guys, that almost came too late. And we know as the audience, it's like, oh, of course it's him. It's got to be him. I hear you.
It felt like it was too obvious for Keanu's character, for Johnny Utah, not to like completely suspect that gang right away, even though he went with, you know, the other gang. You know, it kind of took some time away from that. And I feel like that could have like tightened things up a little bit more. I agree.
Yeah. And you have the element in Fast and Furious with Paul Walker and Vin Diesel. They have a friendship and it's a love, and it makes it so much harder for Paul Walker to do his job. And there's a little bit of that in this movie, but it almost, because that reveal comes so late, I feel like you don't get the sense of his struggle. Like I think if I could pinpoint one thing, it felt like it took so long for those two plot lines to basically combine and gel together that for the longest time I was like, okay, there's the surfing movie and there's the crazy he's an FBI undercover agent movie. You know, it felt like there were a bunch of ideas that just kind of got thrown together. Do you get that feel from this movie?
Well, I feel like it's kind of playing on a level where it's not really kind of living in a reality, even though nothing like super advantageous happens that it couldn't happen. But I mean, it feels like it's kind of parodying kind of like a sense of macho-ness, in like between the relationships of the guys, because you're taking these two leads that aren't like Arnold Schwarzenegger's. They're not, Van Damme's. They're not like ripped guys that are even known for action movies up to this point,
Yeah.
And you're mainly playing on them as characters, kind of falling for each other and kind of, respecting each other in a way, and Bodhi more being in love with his, like, sort of like almost like a samurai. Like, he has a code that he wants to adhere to, and I think Johnny has a code that he feels he needs to adhere to, but I feel like he feels like he's kind of missed something in his life, and so it's like he's more attracted to who Bodhi is, and he wants to be like that. And so I think, especially with having a woman direct this, I think it's kind of interesting that she's the one kind of really examining the relationship between these two guys. And
yeah.
So that's kind of what I, love the most. It's over the top machismo, but done in like almost kind of like a romantic way.
Yeah,
like
it is
weirdly. Yeah,
it is very much like a bromantic. It's got that bromantic feel. There is so much homoeroticism in this movie. Again, it brings to mind Top Gun in that regard. Just the fact that Utah realizes who the guys are because he recognizes the guy's ass. I was like, this movie is incredible.
Yeah.
And then, they're skydiving. I wrote a note that said this is the gayest skydiving scene I've ever seen. But it's like there is that there's the sense of I wanted more of the bromance. I wanted more of maybe Utah just kind of having those bonding moments with Bodhi, like sitting down. There are a couple like decent moments where they kind of talk a little bit, but I almost wanted, I don't know, it was hard to connect to the movie and that relationship, because it felt like it was so distracted in terms of like, the fun of the surfing, the fun of that life, and then cutting back and forth between the scenes with him and the FBI stuff. Like,
yeah,
you got to get the job done. I really wanted it to let that relationship breathe a little bit. And I think if you move the reveal a little earlier in the movie, maybe have that be kind of the break into act two instead of like the halfway mark, it works a little bit better.
Yeah. And I agree. Like the reveal it's a little too obvious. And I'm thinking, just from that point of view, if I were, going to rewrite this, I might have Bodhi as, and it would kind of fit with his character, be kind of almost like this mythical character that he doesn't get to meet. He only kind of sees from a distance and almost kind of idolizes from a distance. And then after he goes after this gang of surfers, he's like, oh, there's five guys together. I think those are the ex-presidents. Yep. And then he comes back, and then all of a sudden Bodhi starts to kind of reveal his team. Then it kind of starts to click. I think that might kind of made things easier.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. Because I just keep going back to it felt like a slice of nostalgia for me. And that's, I always am troubled by how I react to movies that way.
Sure.
If, how much am I relying on nostalgia to kick in? Because that's nostalgia. It's a hell of a drug. Like, it can make the worst things so palatable and make you just sit down and, watch anything for at least 90 minutes.
Oh, it's true. And, I mean, ask anybody about Hook, the movie Hook. Like one of the shining beacons of what you're talking about, where people who were adults when they saw that movie hate that movie and they rip it as one of Spielberg's worst. But like anyone who was a kid who saw that is like, oh my God, it's one of the best movies ever. And that nostalgic factor is like, is that blinding you from the quality of the film? Or is it, does it matter? Is that part of an experience? Is that part of a viewing experience? Does that emotion or does that connection, should it exist in a vacuum or should it be considered when you're like talking about a movie? Like, should that raise the bar a little bit, or should it just say like, hey, I recognize the faults, but because of my personal connection, this is how I feel.
Yeah. And I think that's with all guilty pleasures. I think guilty pleasure and nostalgia come extremely close at so many times. Like I think we just kind of like, we just have this fondness and it triggers a lot of, you know, nice fuzzy feelings. And this one triggers so many fuzzy feelings, and mainly between Keanu Reeves and Patrick Swayze. I don't know what it is about those guys, but it just completely works. So what else did or didn't work for you?
So I've talked a lot about what didn't work. Let me move on to the more positive stuff. There were a lot of great moments. Like I said, I think Bigelow's direction is on point. It was very clear to me from every action scene. There's just a kinetic energy to that early bank robbery scene. And very early on in the movie, I was just like, oh yeah, awesome. Okay, cool. And it was just like, then we get back to the surfing and I was like, oh, I wish she had more of a chance to do more of this. There are those three great sequences with there's that scene, there's the car chase scene, the scene with him chasing them on foot, where he hurts himself and then shoots the gun in the air, that classic moment. And then the house raid scene when they bust the wrong guys. Those three, it's so clear where she got her kind of action chops, that she kind of really was already developing them on this movie. And I wanted more of that. I wanted more of that action. It was so good and executed so well. When it got into the dialogue and the plot elements, things started to crumble a little bit for me. But I love that. I like I said, I love the fact the homoeroticism in this movie is off the charts. The fact that like it's just like he's watching them surf and the guy moons him and he's like, oh my God, it's him. And I was like, you recognized his ass. This is incredible. Like, it's just, it's absolute insanity. And there's so many great moments. I mean, this movie has the most absurd dialogue at points. Like, it feels very much like someone was like, I have to come up with a script that has just like these crazy one-liners that are like like in the vein of Shane Black. Like they probably saw Lethal Weapon and they're thinking about like, okay, I've got to live up to that level. And like I wrote down a couple. They don't make any sense. Like I don't understand. But the one that really threw me off, I'm gonna have to bleep this, but I'm gonna say it anyway. At the beginning when he's like, I think Gary Busey's character is like, you're young, dumb, and full of and I was like, what does that mean? Is like, is it, again with the homoeroticism? I know what they're trying to say. I think they're trying to say like, oh yeah, you're thinking with your you know what, but the way it sounds is not at all like that. And it was just badly, like I got the concept behind the line, but it just does not work. And then when Bodhi says, yeah, I know you want me so bad, it's like acid in your mouth. It's like, wait, acid in your what? What does that mean? You just get the sense of somebody trying really hard to grasp for like, yeah, really quotable one-liners, but like not connecting the dots between what sounds cool and what actually makes sense. But again, that's that kind of is in line with what appealed to me about this movie. And then the when Keanu is getting accosted during his shower scene and the guys come to beat him up, and Bodhi comes in to save him, and he goes, hey, back off, war child, seriously. And I was like, war child? What is this, Road Warrior? What is this movie? I just couldn't.
They all have their surf names, and so you gotta respect the tribes, you gotta respect the names, or else you're stepping on somebody else's territory, you start a gang war, and then they're surfing on your turf, they're surfing on your turf. You can't have that. You gotta keep peace in the surf realm, or else it's a chaos, and then it turns into no man's land. So, or it turns into a Mad Max Thunderdome sort of situation. So, yes, they already have the Mad Max names. You just don't want the scenario. You don't want the leather chaps and everything to come into play.
Right, exactly. So I loved that. The dialogue is just, it's so corny enough that it works. And I wanted the rest of the movie to just be full-blown ridiculous in that regard. But I loved Gary Busey. I didn't realize he was in this movie, so that was very...
Oh, is
very
that right?
Anytime
somebody... I'm speaking in real life. Anytime somebody is getting something that I personally want, and I'm, you know, telling them to get me some, I go, I just say, Utah, give me two. That's just what I say.
That's another
hoping
one
they'll
of,
get the point
it's one of my favorite
that I
lines.
Want. I want one as well. But I will literally use that in a daily conversation. Is Utah, give me two. I think as absurd as these words are, the one person that I think sticks the most landings with how to like how to use it, and it feels just kind of fluid. Yes, it feels still kind of clunky, but it feels like it's like it feels like something he would say is Gary Busey. He just kind of like emotes that sort of craziness that's already, you know, festering in that mind of his, that I think it just kind of it works so well.
When they were at the beginning,
I love Angelo Pappas.
Yes, when they were arguing, like after they investigate the car, he's like, "Are you mad?" "Yeah, I'm mad." He's like, "Well, good. Maybe we can work this out and find these guys." That whole scene is so funny. I absolutely adored it. But what are your standout moments in this movie? Like, what is like, if someone's
standout
like
moments for me?
Yeah.
You know, I would have to say that every time I think about this movie, I always think, you talked about how, you know, him chasing down the car. It's once they leave the car and it's the two of them on foot. That is one of my all-time favorite chase scenes. It is fantastic.
It's so good.
From what I understand, she strapped a handheld 35 onto a pole and then like kind of jerry-rigged it with like the guts of a Steadicam. So they were able to kind of get around like kind of like tight places and kind of run with the character. So the DP had like a sort of a viewfinder so he could kind of have somewhat of an idea of what he was filming, but really just had to kind of keep up with him the whole time, because you can tell they're running full tilt and she's right up there with him.
Yeah.
And then when it ends going down that into that reservoir, and you get the eyes and you get it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful, and it makes me think of, you know, especially nowadays, it makes me think of Hot Fuzz,
right?
And it makes me think of Danny Butterman telling him that story. Have you never like loved somebody so much that you fired your gun in the air and said, "Ah," you know? It's a beautiful moment, and it's capped off by one of the best chase scenes that's been set to film, and it's a you know, on foot chasing. I think like some of them, can be like just so bland because, you know, directors will literally just like put a camera on the ground and like their big move is to like have somebody jump over the camera and you're like,
right.
Oh, it's just boring. This was not boring. It's so energetic and there's so much like just, you can tell she's like a youthful director. There's lots of new things that she's trying out. And especially this is early in her career. It's great.
I completely agree. I love that. Like I said, that's one of the standout moments for me as well. It's just such a, like you said, there's so much energy to it and you really feel it. You feel like you're right in there. I also love that Utah crashes and falls and gets beat up. And at the very end, he just happens to jump off this little 10-foot thing and my leg. I thought that was hysterical. I was like, you mean crashing through a glass door didn't hurt your leg, but you jumped off this little ledge.
It happens in the worst, you know, places, right? It's when you're about to get the bad guy. It always happens. But another shining moment for me, and this is again probably going more to nostalgia, but I love Lori Petty. She was one of my crushes growing up. It was
Free
pretty
Willy.
Much this and Tank. This Free Willy was there, but also Tank Girl. Those were like I loved Lori Petty from that, and so she was definitely one of my '90s crushes growing up. And Point Break was like one of the major ones.
Yeah, no, she's great in this movie. It's so funny because I every time I see her in a movie, like when A League of Their Own is on, and it's like, oh yeah, what happened mm-hmm. to her? It's like she kind of disappeared. She was like very a staple of the early 90s. And as a kid, I mm-hmm. recognized her immediately from Free Willy. But she was in so many of these like classic movies, and then she just kind of disappeared. But she is she's so good in this. And again,
she popped back just a little bit ago. She came back in Orange Is the New Black.
Oh,
and I'm not sure if that's still on, but she was in that. I got through like the first two seasons. I need to get back into it, but
we'll get her. We'll get her to come on the show. Yeah. She'll come on the show, and we'll be like, tell us all about Point Break. What compare and contrast?
My wife said that we can go on a date. Yeah,
exactly. my wife says it's okay for all of us to go on a date together. It's been perfectly fine. Are there any other like great moments for you, like favorite lines or things that you just the Gimme Two is a great one, and
Utah Gimme Two, and you know, just saying I am an FBI agent,
it's so satisfying.
It's satisfying just to say it in that voice. I know it's clunky, I know it's like it doesn't sound right, but I love it. There's something about it that just makes me like, I don't know. It tickles me to death that there's somebody out there that, you know, isn't the best at what they do. But when you put him in that situation, he's going to give it his all. Is his all the best? No. But it doesn't matter. It works for what we're watching right now. And what we're watching is a bromance between a cop who's imitating a surfer, and a Zen Buddhist who's a surfer who's, you know, trying to be to rob some banks, and it like makes no sense, but it's beautiful in the same way. And of course, skydiving out of a plane without a parachute. That was
that's
iconic.
So good.
It's like, who else has done that? James Bond, and that's it. I mean,
it's true.
That's pretty
I think
awesome.
You're right. That was a very James Bond moment, because that was my immediate thought. I was like, oh yeah, this is like Roger Moore Bond, where they're always jumping out of planes without chutes. But I was super nervous, because I was getting to the end of the movie, and I was like, wait a second, when's the only scene I remember that scarred me as a child, when Bodhi goes off and commits suicide by getting the ultimate wave? And I was nervous, because mm-hmm. I was like checking the time, and I was like, there's only like 10 minutes left in this movie. Did I dream that scene? I hope not. I made such a fuss about it in the first part, and then it showed up, and it was like a moment where you're having like, I guess, what may be akin to an acid trip, but it was like I was that 8-year-old kid again watching that scene. And what was so funny to me about it, I remember watching the fight between the two of them when like he almost drowns Utah and like he handcuffs him. So I saw the most violent part of that scene, but for some reason the thought of Bodhi just going off and surfing and never coming back was too much for me. And I'm like, what was I thinking? Right? Like, I had already, if I was concerned about like, oh, R-rated level violence or it's disturbing, I already saw the peak of that moment. I thought that was just hysterical. I don't know what I was expecting, if I don't know, but I was scared that I wasn't. I was like, I hope this scene is in this movie. I hope I'm thinking of the right movie. But when it showed up, it made me so happy. It felt like yes.
There we go.
It was.
Yeah, and
was
I think that's another thing that I kind of like about the movie is it doesn't really feel like it follows the basic structure of you know, your buddy cop movie. Like, it feels like it's the type of movie that, again, should be over in 90 minutes. Like, it you know, tells its little, you know, first 30 minutes is one, second 30, and then the last 30, it all, you know, kind of fits together. But they start, you know, once the ex-presidents know who Utah is, and they still are, you know, trying to kind of piece this, you know, what have they done with, I just forgot her name, with Lori Petty's character. Mm. And, you know, they're using her as ransom now so they can, you know, get out of Dodge. And, you know, I remembered it just felt like the structure was different from, you know, most movies I'm used to. And it being like, you know, a 2-hour movie, you know, it just felt different and kind of refreshing. And that's kind of also what I like about it, is it feels like it has a lot of extra stuff going on that you don't normally get in those kind of movies. It felt more like, you know, your higher caliber, like Lethal Weapons or something like that, and the way it ended. And it kind of mirrors that same sort of thing, even ending in a fight scene in the rain. So
right. It starts in the rain.
With Gary Busey and not Gary Busey, but still.
I know. I was so sad when he bit the dust in this movie. And
Right.
But, you know, the movie starts in the rain. For some reason, Utah is forced to do his gun training in the pouring rain. And it ends in the rain. So it's like poetry. They rhyme. The whole thing with her character Tyler, that felt a little tacked on to me. Like, they needed the damsel in distress motivation for Utah to go rescue her. It's one of those things where I see where you're coming from, and I see how it feels kind of fresh. And for me, it's like, man, I just wish this was kind of more organically throughout the movie. It felt a little too like, and a bunch of stuff is going to happen in the third act. And I remember being really confused. I was like, they saw him. They know he's undercover. Why are they being buddy buddy with him? And this is weird. It was hard to follow at times. Like at points it was like, are they pretending? Are they not? I don't know. But
yeah, it's one of those where, when it comes down to it, it's just like, this makes me feel happy inside. And I know it is full of, let's just say, it's cheesy. It's a cheesy movie, but you know what? Sometimes I like a meatball sub with cheese, but like, you know, a Parmesan or maybe a mozzarella. I'm not really sure what goes on it, but
all of the above,
you know, give me two meatball subs with cheese, and that's this movie, and it's perfect.
So, speaking of meatball subs, let's make that our rating system.
Yeah.
So, on a scale, on a scale of 1 to 5 meatball subs, how many meatball subs does Point Break get?
Well, I'm already ordering 2, so I'm going to go for an order of 4, 2 meatball subs. Give me 4 meatball subs. Or how's that working? One order of 2.
It's not so about 4 surfers. We're not about the maths.
we're not mathematicians. give me 4.
Okay,
Utah,
perfect.
Give me 4.
I'm
going
go ahead.
For 4 out of 5.
I'll edge it up from 2. I'll do 2.5. This movie is
okay.
I feel like 3 is right on my border of I liked it. 2 is when I start to border down into didn't like it. And I definitely didn't. I didn't not like it, but I wanted more out of the experience. I was disappointed that I didn't get as much absurdity, as much as there is in this movie. I know that sounds ridiculous. I'm sure if you're listening to us talk about it and you haven't seen the movie, you're like, how can you be saying this movie isn't ridiculous right now? But tonally, I just wanted it to go maybe just a little bit more into that area. And so I'll say 2.5. I would like to revisit it at some point just to see. Maybe my expectations for the story were kind of throwing me off a little bit. So going back and watching it again, and I want to go and see all of Bigelow's earlier movies. What was the other one? Near Dark. Was that the one you mentioned?
Check out Near Dark. That's a great one to check out. Yeah.
Okay, cool. That may be a future Missing Frames,
I think this was also an interesting point in Keanu's career. 'Cause this is literally the movie. I mean, we kind of see him nowadays. I mean, he's done a lot of different genres, but there's a lot of instances where we would call Keanu Reeves an action star. And this was literally his first action movie. And, you know, 3 years later, he's off to Speed and then The Matrix and then, of course, the iconic John Wick now.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot that is owed to Bigelow kind of seeing him as this vessel. Like that's all he really is like, yes, he can't, you know, put these lines out like he might need to, but I think as a surfer he does them just as maybe needed. And but he can run and jump and shoot and, you know, do everything that's needed to keep the energy alive in this movie. So that's what I love about it. And if it gave us you know, action Keanu Reeves, and if it gave us the Fast and the Furious, then
there you go.
I say it's a bonus.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Those are two invaluable things that I you have to credit this movie with. But other than that, I think we're good to go. Aaron, this
good,
has been
man.
Fantastic. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to watch this movie.
No, thank you. It was an honor to be on here again. I love your neo sincerity to going into a movie blindly, and hopefully for, you know, people to not movie shame other people, and, you know, say, let's watch it together and let's have a conversation, because that's what it's all about.
And that's very much appreciated. And Aaron, you have a podcast as well. Why don't you tell the people at home about that?
Sure. So I am a host of Rest in Pictures. It's a podcast. The motto is Celebrating Cinematic Life Through Death. And it's a podcast where we focus on a recently departed figure in within cinema, and kind of look at their entire what makes them an important part of our, you know, kind of cinematic journey. Because it feels like recently, especially since, like, 2015 was a really tough year for cinephiles. There were a lot of people that, you know, passed away that we were just like, oh, wow, it was like one after another. Yeah. And I think it just kind of has gotten to a point where we have so much interaction with our, you know, icons of cinema. You know, we have DVDs and VHSs and Blu-rays that we constantly rewatch. So these people are much more with us than the kind of golden era Age of Hollywood stars were. And so I think that makes it a little more vital. They're more part of our lives. And so we like to, you know, reflect on that. And I'm actually, this is a Missing Frames exclusive, is that I'm actually kicking off the next episode with a new co-host. My old co-host, awesome. David, he's got some other work, and he still has, you know, a brand new baby, and he has also got some health issues that he's going through right now. And so he wanted to take a hiatus and said, hey, you go off and go ahead and start doing something with it, since it was kind of yours. And so I have talked former Missing Frames alum Brad Gullickson into joining me. And so we will be teaming up this coming week. We'll be recording our first episode with him and doing Bob Hoskins. So that will be he didn't just pass away. He passed away a few years ago. But if we don't have anybody that's relatively recent, we do like a death anniversary of, sure, like, you know, of April from a few years ago. So we're doing that, and I've had a really good time doing it. So you can follow us at Rest in Pictures on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We could be Rest in Pictures Pod somewhere, but you'll find us. You'll find us there somewhere.
No, it's great, and I love the concept, and I love the way you guys celebrate the lives of these amazing filmmakers and actors and really great artists. It's really fantastic. So everyone check it out. And then if people want to find you just in general on the Twitter, is there a handle they can reach out to?
You can find me at A Cool Hand Fluke, and you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. I'm frequent on all those things, saying inappropriate things, I'm sure, and sharing pictures of my kids, and who knows what else.
Perfect. And you can find me at Yay Sean Dorman on Twitter. You can find me Sean Dorman on Instagram if you so desire. And if you like what you're hearing, feel free to give us a 5-star rating. I also highly encourage you to check out all the other great shows on thenerdparty.com. Lots of cool stuff going on. We are just wrapping up MCU Rewatch. By the time this episode airs, Infinity War will be out. So that's just insanity, and I'll be guesting on Filibuster to give my thoughts on that. So keep your eyes peeled next week for that, or this coming Wednesday. And again, Aaron, thank you so much. We'll have to have you back on, probably not to watch the remake of Point Break. We'll find something better.
Sounds good to me.